When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESNY. All right, here we go. Back in the studio. So who hit some bombs for the Phillies last night that you saw?
I believe JT hit a bomb. Just absolutely stupid pitch. It was like a hanging curveball, and he absolutely demolished it. And everyone around me is going crazy, but I'm going crazy because I have him on my fantasy team, so I needed that. He actually almost hit two home runs, but he hit the top of the fence in his last at bat.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who you watch him hit, and you could tell just from the way he's built. Okay, yeah, this guy, he's built big up top. This dude's a catcher, you know?
Yeah.
And he just kind of has that weird, like, Conan the Barbarian movement with the swing where it's like, crum!
Jesus Christ. It's a thing of beauty when he connects with it, though.
I just lost his 20 subscribers just doing that damn thing. What's happening, guys? It is Bleacher Creatures, episode 141. We were off last week. I was at the glorious Jersey Shore in Point Beach. Brought the kids down there. Or our kid with our neighbor's kid. It was fun. I didn't get fried Oreos. I failed in that.
No?
No, like I don't know. I never craved them when I was there.
You know, I'm not like, I've heard great things. I'm not a big Oreo person to begin with. So the idea of deep frying it, it's not like any added appeal.
It's just one of those cultural things when you go to the shore. It's like, okay, you have to try it.
Right.
Like state fair sort of things.
Like, come on, I eat too much fried food to begin with. I don't need to add that.
Oh, man. I did have this one drink, though, that was absolutely dangerous. I think it was vodka, Red Bull. I'm sorry, mango vodka, OJ, and Red Bull. And it was delicious. And it was loaded down with sugar. I'm like, I have this like badass Hawaiian shirt on. Sitting by the beach drinking this. I'm like, this is going to be my new reality. I'm going to be that sports writer who lives on the beach, wears like goofy shirts, and then just brings the laptop to the bar and then tic-tacs away on the laptop and then just has these almost Hunter S. Thompson encounters with the locals.
Yeah, you know what? That sounds pretty ideal. I think tomorrow we're going to this beer garden. That's a stone's throw away from where we live. And kid you not, they have the best frozen drink. It's a Hawaiian. Okay. Yeah. No, they have an incredible like selection. So
Blue Hawaiian, you said?
Yeah, Blue Hawaiian. It's so fucking good. I mean, I could give me a picture of that and I'll
hangover in a picture. Yeah. Well, speaking of hangovers, the Yankees kind of went through one through most of August. Now the main thing is that for a while, yeah, they were playing 500 ball, having some bad losses like we talked about with Max Greenfield last time on the show, but the hitting was still there, which was the good thing. And all of a sudden, the hitting disappeared. Now, Alec, you are a former hitting coach. You know the science, the mechanics of hitting. I want to discuss right now the mechanics of a slump because I think it was Paul O'Neill or John Flaherty who said on the Yes broadcast recently, when the whole team is going through a slump, when nobody's hitting, nobody's getting good pitches to hit. And we saw this in some at-bats of Aaron Judge. They were working the corners on him nonstop. We've been talking all year how compared to 2021, the Yankees have been taking some cleaner swings, and that just went completely out the window. They're like hacking, swinging, sawing at anything in the zone, just desperate to make something happen. Having played college ball, high school ball, is there indeed that trickle-down effect where everyone just gets kind of desperate and starts swinging at bad pitches?
Absolutely. I keep getting text messages. I don't know why they're doing this.
So rude.
So rude.
We're so popular. I mean, maybe we should. Seriously. Do I need to open up a text chain for people to come in with some questions? Jeez.
Yeah. Now's the time to just start texting me. There's absolutely an effect where, you know, if your top guys aren't getting the job done, then it puts some added pressure on the lower guys to try to get it done. And they're going to start pressing and chasing pitches. They're not going to work the counts in the way that they want to be. And they'll be swinging at pitchers' pitches. Now, on the reverse side, if no one else in the lineup is hitting, then that's exposing the big guns, right? So, like, the Aaron Judges, in an extent, Rizzo or
because Stanton's been hurt.
I was going to say Stan when he's healthy. But, like, you know, when a guy like Judge is now the only threat in the lineup, of course pitchers are going to afford to be more
cute with the zone.
Right? Yeah, cute with the zone. And then that puts added pressure on the power guy, on the Aaron Judge, where if no one else is getting the job done, he's sitting there thinking, I got to get the job done. Then he's forcing himself to swing outside of his game plan, right? So the mechanics of a slump isn't necessarily the physical mechanics. It's more of that mental side, because the swings themselves aren't just deteriorating. It's how their approach deteriorates in the process. So I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, and you just kind of saw it. Kind of gave us almost flashbacks to last year, where I don't know about you, but just from opening day in 2021, just the way the bats were looking, even early on, and maybe even in spring training, in my head I kept going, no, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Something's very, very wrong. Now, mind you, I was kind of expecting a downturn in offense last year, and even more so this year, because it's very obvious the juice balls were ridiculous over we'll call it a 4-year period.
Yeah.
But then when you regress that far to the mean and you realize just how much the juice balls were affecting you, it really exposes the flaws in the whole approach. Mm-hmm. Now, we saw last year, okay, they're waiting for a perfect mistake. From the get-go, nobody's hitting. Oh, look, they keep up with that approach. It doesn't work. Cut to playing almost 500 ball almost the entire year. This season, it's, again, comically bad month in the grand scheme of things. That's what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, you wonder, like, suppose this happens again in October. Like, how's this team going to overcome it? And you think, okay, and I understand Stanton's a big loss. So is Matt Carpenter. But how good is a team when one guy is out of the lineup because guys get hurt? You can't control that. How good is a team that if a guy goes down, then, okay, the whole house of cards collapses?
Yeah, I would say not that good of a team. And, you know, when we it's in these situations where you don't have the red hot Carpenter or the Stantons in the lineup, where the patience you might have had with some of the underperforming guys quickly deteriorates. I mean, Donaldson has not been what we'd hoped for him to be. I've wasted too many words on Gleyber Torres. IKF swings a wet noodle. And so all of a sudden, when your top half of the lineup is missing the Carpenters, the Stantons, the Rizzos at that one point, and all of a sudden you're running out a lineup that's involving IKF, Gleyber, and Donaldson, who are just not even replacement level hitters. Yeah, like that makes you wonder and think, did we just slap lipstick on a pig and call it a day? Right?
I mean, John Boy tweeted this out from FanGraphs. They have runs above average against certain pitches, and looking at the Yankees, between Stanton, Carpenter being out, this lineup has a very hard time with the slider. Because runs above average, Aaron Judge, 13.4. Stanton, 7. Carpenter, 5.7. Then you got DJ LeMahieu, who's 3. But, okay, even if he has trouble with the slider, he's at least not striking out a ton. He can put the ball in play. Same goes for Trevino, who's at 2.2. Rizzo, 1.5. You want to hear something sad about Gleyber Torres, man? Runs above average on the slider, negative 0.3. Kyle Higashioka is ahead of him at plus 0.4.
Yeah. Yep. That doesn't surprise me. That just does not surprise me at all. I mean, oh boy, we're getting close to a Gleyber Torres tangent here. But
I mean, it's too many
hitters who are just too stubborn in their ways, I personally think. And this is coming off a 3-game winning streak. Like, don't get me wrong, but I mean,
the good thing about this 3-game winning streak is that I think Benintendi's finally figured out, okay, like, I'm settled in and see what pitches I'm going to get. If he's the leadoff man against righties the rest of the season, I think that's a great approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I it's funny how as soon as he starts hitting, how much of that dynamic changes. Like, he was fantastic over the weekend or over the week. Like,
yeah,
that's exactly who we traded for.
We were at the second game of the Subway Series, and just when he got that RBI single, like, the place just exploded. Especially after that, because that was after that mental mistake that Gleyber made on the.
Oh wait, you were at that game?
Yeah, game two. I was there.
Oh, damn.
With two Mets fans.
Oh God. I bet they were giving you shit for Gleyber, huh?
not really. I mean, because they're – okay, so it's a couple. He is originally from Oakland and is an A's fan, but he's very much a New Yorker now, went to Fordham, is putting down roots here. And he's like, you know what? I'm an A's fan. By default, I have to adopt the Mets as the local team. And he also understands the game, and he's not obnoxious about it. His girlfriend, she doesn't care about baseball, but her family are all diehard Red Sox fans. So that's their dynamic. It was a fun night.
Very interesting.
I'll say this much, man. It was very much an October vibe at the stadium. Like, there's no doubt about it.
Really?
Yeah. It was stressful, like, sitting there in the left field bleachers, because you remember where my seats are. In the bleachers. Yes. So now, so like we're in that same general area, but closer to the bar now, just people coming in and out. So many, like, they clearly oversold some standing room tickets, but dude, it was stressful. Just like, it's a close game. Everyone's going in and out. Like, there's no, like, it's like Grand Central Station.
Oh boy.
It was, I almost left. I was like, Nope. Not worth it. Get out of here.
Yeah. I don't know if I would have even been able to enjoy it under those circumstances. I've been like, nobody touch me. Nobody come near me. Since the pandemic, I've become such an anti-people person. Just
I'm doing this. Yeah, but it's like, not interested. Get out of here. This was funny, though. And it was so crowded that Caitlin and I walked over to the bar and just to get a couple drinks. Right to the left, right to the wall of the bleachers by that entrance. There's maybe 6 or 7 guys just standing around a half circle, very subtly and quietly smoking weed in the ballpark.
Nice. Well, yeah, when my sister was in town, her husband was saying, like, because they went to opening day in Colorado. Just so happened they were in Colorado for one of their friend's wedding. He's like, yeah, people were just smoking weed everywhere. It's like, yeah, dude, it's fucking Colorado. You expect. I'm not surprised they let in the stadium.
I mean, I'm sure they're certainly not supposed to, because it's a hard no smoking spot in Yankee Stadium, because there was a security guy who came over, busted him, and he wasn't mean about it, because they weren't being obnoxious. They were trying to be very quiet about it.
Yeah.
He walks over. He's like, hey, guys, like, come on. You got to stop that. Put it out. And then sure enough, I asked him, hey, is there actually a designated smoking area in the stadium? Because I think Citi Field has one, or at least the old Shea Stadium did, as the sirens go off.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you live
there. We live in hospitals. It's a regular thing. I also gotta get a new mic that's gonna isolate the sound more. but also, he was cool about it. He was like, nah, people are vaping as it is. We just can't have it there. But let's talk about the actual Subway Series. Against Max Scherzer, and again, as an ex-hitting coach, I'm sure you saw this as well. At Citi Field, it's very clear there. Independent of the slump and playing 500 ball, they're like, okay, it's Max Scherzer. He's very good, Hall of Fame pitcher, pretty much modern day Nolan Ryan, but without the walk trouble. We're going to wait for him to make a mistake and then just tee off. Didn't work out. He carved him up, struck out Judge, I think, 3 times on the slider. This time they said, nope, he's a good pitcher. We're taking the attack to him. Sure enough, first inning base runners.
Yeah. I mean, When I was a hitting instructor and a coach, you know, I would always tell my hitters, like, being defensive at the plate is the death of a hitter. Like, if you sit there and you're defensive from the get-go, you're not going to succeed. You can't let pitchers get into their rhythms. You can't let them establish the comfort zone. And especially with the really, like, good pitchers, like a Scherzer, even like a DeGrom, as good as they are, part of their dominance is, like, the bully aspect. You know, mm-hmm. it's the, you know, what's the famous yogiism? It's 90% mental and the other half physical or whatever.
98% mental, the other half is physical.
Yeah, so, you know, for pitchers like Scherzer, you know, he's got the two different colored eyes. He talks to himself on the mound. He's just mean mugging up there. Like, yeah, it's as much a mental thing as is a physical thing. And what happens when the hitter is saying, like, or just like, fuck you, we're going to try to ambush and go? Like, good things happen. And that's not to say Scherzer was awful. It's just the Yankees did enough. And that's how you need to approach these aces, these fireballers, is you have to be aggressive from the get-go. And that was encouraging to see, for sure.
Well, I'm going to argue that there is a time and place for being defensive at the plate, because, like, throughout, like, looking at my years of playing Little League and JV and subsequent high school ball, and then, like, the hot minute I played intramural softball in college, like my one year in the Can-Am League, we'll call it. If I'm, like, just look, because I've recently reconnected with my old high school coach and, like, one of my old hitting coaches, and, like, pretty much we said, okay, like, look at the way you played through all those years. Switch hitter, doesn't strike out a lot. Well, it's like a Greg Jeffries type. Mm-hmm. Just, like not too many walks, but not too many strikeouts either. Yeah. But, like, because you say, okay, like, sometimes being defensive will kill you. Okay, yeah, it will. But at the same time, you can be defensive as long as you go up the mentality. And I think this is very much what Dylan Lawson says. Regardless of result, we're not striking out. Like, mm-hmm. like we will jump in front of the D train or the 4 train, whatever train goes to Yankee Stadium, before we strike out in an at-bat. and there's value to that approach.
There is. But I would argue that maybe you shift the idea of being defensive. Because I understand what you're saying, and I don't know if I would so much as call it being defensive. But there is a way to where, you know, you try to be stingy and you try to swing at the pitches that you want to swing at, and you don't swing at the pitcher's pitches. Like that, like, you, there is that element of you forcing the pitcher come to you. And there are certain circumstances where that's going to work. Apparently that is a lesson that Gleyber Torres has yet to learn. Remember that when he grounded into that double play with the bases loaded after the pitcher walked whoever it was on four pitches. Oh, no, that's keeping the night. That's a cardinal sin. But anyway, because when you think of the guys who are kind of high contact, low strikeout, you know, they're scrappy, but I don't think I would call them defensive in their approach. I think they're still looking for their pitch to hit, and they're still, like, being aggressive on their swings. But I like, to me, the idea of being defensive is you have no intention of going up there and putting on your grade A swing. It's just you're just up there to try to survive. I should have probably clarified that earlier.
No, that's a good point. Because IKF, even though he doesn't strike out a lot, it's clear he's up there to survive.
How many times do we see him kind of throw away an at bat by swinging on the first pitch and hitting a ground ball to the shortstop?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, dude, you couldn't work. I'm the kind of hitter who I always respect people who like to jump on first pitches. I love to do it because sometimes that's the best pitch you're going to hit, but you still got to be smart. Like, half the time he's swinging that first pitch sliders, and it's like, now, were you expecting it to be a slider, or would you just tell yourself swing no matter what? Like, because that's a big difference.
See, I almost always took the first pitch because my mentality was, hey, like, that means an extra pitch for him to throw.
Fair. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fair. I mean,
so
I was the number four hitter, so I had to do damage. I couldn't, I had no speed. So it's like, I'm either trying to hit it over the fence or to the fence.
I remember, I think one year, because I kind of hit all over the place, but I think once I kind of hit into the groove and got into the groove in high school, when we were facing a righty, I would bat second. And when we were facing a lefty, I would bat sixth.
Hmm.
I got, for some reason or other, that's how Coach stacked the lineup. Anywho, but Subway Series between Scherzer, Taijuan Walker, who I must say his sinker did look very good early on, but then I think he kind of started tipping it the second time through the lineup. It's clear these Mets are a very, very good team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, all respect to them, all respect to how Buck has been managing them. They are a good team. They're talented. They seem to have finally shaken off the whole, oh, we are the Mets kind of persona that's been haunting them for the last few years. And yeah, absolutely. They definitely seem like the real deal. And
I think they kind of came into this series expecting to kind of be business as usual. And they kind of mentally in the box, they've started trying to do too much. Like, hey, let's go for that one big swing. Let's try to get guys on base and then just score a bunch of runs in a hurry. And the Yankees pitchers are like, we remember last time. Now you're going to have to work.
Yeah, I think.
Because Lindor took some ugly swings. Lindor took some ugly swings against
the Mets. There was in that ninth inning, I saw a post on Twitter. He swung at every single pitch and they weren't in the strike zone.
Yeah.
It's like he was way too aggressive in that situation.
I think in that particular case, because Wandy's been running a little cold lately, he was just expecting Wandy to make a mistake and was just anticipating that mistake way too often. Yeah. And then sure enough, got called his pants down. And the hit he hit out to Florial to end the game, he got decent enough contact on that. Because that's another thing about these Mets. They were hitting into outs, but they were making some good contact.
Yeah.
Almost like the Orioles, but obviously a more talented team. But yeah, I mean, this is very much a Subway Series potential. I mean, the Yankees have to get through Houston. The Mets have to get through the Dodgers, and they still have to fight off the Braves. But at the same time, yeah, like, if this is a Subway Series, it's not going to be like 2000 where it's like, oh, look at the Mets. Like, who let the dogs out? Ha, 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 ha. No, like, these Mets are – they're a force to be reckoned with. Jacob DeGrom in Yankee Stadium. I mean, yeah, he doesn't pitch well there particularly, because I actually looked this up. His ERA in Yankee Stadium, I think in 3 or 4 starts, is north of 6.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense because it's a small ballpark and he's so fastball dominant, it's probably not that hard to tee off of him in a ballpark like that.
Yeah, or maybe it's just a matter of, like, you just got to make a little bit of contact and hope you, if you're righty, hit it to right field.
Yeah.
It's like,
above all else, to anyone listening, Yankees fans, Mets fans, baseball fans, enjoy the ride while it lasts, because the Mets right now, yeah, they're good, but Brandon Nimmo's a free agent at the end of the year. So is Edwin Diaz. Pete Alonso has to get paid soon. You're locked into Lindor for all that money.
Isn't DeGrom opting out?
DeGrom's opting out. You got to figure out what you're going to do with him and if he's worth all the injuries. Max Scherzer, you have a lot of money tied up in him. So, Steve Cohen, he's got some big decisions to make. And if he's more than happy to spend the money, more power to him. But Buck Showalter knows firsthand what happens when you sacrifice the farm system for payroll.
Absolutely.
The 90s Yankees don't happen without him and Gene Michael utilizing the core four or helping develop the core four while Steinbrenner's off on suspension.
Yeah.
So I'm going to enjoy every last second of it. I really hope the Mets don't beat the Yankees in the World Series, because then my relatives will never let me live it down.
it's such a good thing when New York is dominating in baseball the way it has been this year. The city just it's almost like a complete feeling. It's not just like, oh, we got one half of the city doing well and the other half is just a laughing stock. Like,
yeah, because I was on my way, because the friends who I told you about who I went to the game with, I'm walking out to go to their place for a couple drinks before we walk over to the stadium, and this one guy who's wearing a Mets hat sees me in my jersey, goes, hey, let's go Mets, F the Yankees, let's go Mets. Yeah. And,
you know, like, I have nothing against the Mets. Like, the team, nothing against them. I like their branding. I like their colors. You know, Edwin Diaz has a fire walkout song.
I hate how much I enjoy that song. It's infuriating. It's
incredible. It is absolutely incredible. I fucking hate Mets fans.
They're the worst.
They are so annoying. I'm sorry for any Mets fan or Met fan adjacent who might be listening to this. But after that conversation, or after that person tried to tell me that Pete Alonso is a generational hitter, I lost all respect.
I'm like, Pete Alonso's OPS is under 900. It's not even 850.
Aaron Judge legitimately might set the American League home run record, and I have not heard a single person say Judge is a generational player. I'm not saying Yankee fans don't say it, but he ain't a fucking generational player. I know that. He's having a great year.
He's closer to a generational player than Alonso is, for sure.
I'm not disagreeing, but...
Yeah, but again, like, the Mets are a fun team. They're annoying. Their fans are annoying.
Yes.
You're a Giants fan, so who's more annoying? Mets. Who's most annoying? Mets fans, Eagles fans, or Cowboys fans? Because they're varying levels of annoying, if you think about it.
They are. And you know what? This might be surprising. I'm going to eliminate Eagles fans from the equation because they're annoying, but in like a little bit of a pathetic way. It's just like, oh, I'm going to let them have it. They haven't had much to root for recently. You know, they had the one Super Bowl in which they sold their souls on. Congratulations, you finally got one. Yeah. Like, you know, and if they want to be chanting the Eagles chant in like literally no context whatsoever, fine, go ahead. You guys need something to hold on to. We live in Philly, for Christ's sake.
My girlfriend
calls this city the Thebes of America. And for any Greek mythology nerds out there, we think like this is the Thebes of America. You know, bad things happen here. Wouldn't be surprised if a riddled speaking sphinx comes down from the sky and enslaves us all. But
in the same vein as Eagles fans being that annoying, Yankees fans are also a level of annoying.
On the
way out, three different fuck Altuve chants.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
At a Mets game.
Yeah, it's as bad as when like Red Sox fans are chanting Yankees suck when they're playing like the Cleveland Indians. It's like enough. Like,
great, we live in your head. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Yankee fans are definitely annoying with the whole like 27 blah blah blah. It's
27 like, rings, suck my dick from the back.
Yeah, but like Cowboy fans, I mean, I have not been personally victimized by a Cowboy fan, so I'm kind of indifferent to them.
They just cling to the Super Bowls, to the history. They're like, oh, we're America's team.
Yeah, so I
can't. It's like, my man, you haven't won anything in 25 years. Get out of here.
Yeah. It's like, who cares? Yeah. And then, yeah, it's like maybe it's just recency bias, but maybe I might say Mets fans a little bit more just because it's like, player A does something fantastic. Player B does something fantastic. Player C, who is a Mets player, does something but doesn't quite get the attention that A and B get. And Mets fans are like, what about my guy? It's like, no, hey, Pete Alonso is a fantastic player. He's having a very good year. He's won the Home Run Derby 2 years in a row. You know, he like, cool, whatever. Just shut the fuck up.
Jeter said, the captain. It's just the Mets.
Like they begrudge Judge. I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. or Judge gets posted on Instagram because he hit like fucking his 48th home run in however many games, which puts him on pace with whoever. And Mets fans are there, like, you know, saying whatever. And it's just like, guys, like, just enjoy baseball. I think that's the thing that's been like kind of one thing I've learned. Just like, people don't enjoy baseball anymore. It's always we can't just say these two players are doing something absolutely fantastic. Let's appreciate both of them at the same time. It's, well, he sucks because I like this guy. You know, it's kind of like the MVP race. It's like, I love what Ohtani is doing. I personally think Judge should be the MVP.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to sit there and try to convince other people that that Ohtani is a fucking mid-level starting pitcher and or whatever. It's like, no, the dude is a generational talent. Literally, we have not seen this kind of player in 100+ years. That's when you can use the generational tag there, Mets fans.
Tell us how you really feel.
Oh, God, man. that conversation still blows my mind. Anyway, moving on.
So Yankees are on a 10-game road trip, 4 in Oakland, 3 in Anaheim, then another 3 at the Trop. The AL West is, in a word, terrible. even though the Yankees always find a way to lose in Oakland, if they just can't mess this up, man. They just can't.
Yeah, which means don't be surprised if they mess it up. But yeah, yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity. I mean,
Stanton's back.
You know, sure, Nestor goes down, but, you know, all full faith in the Clark.
In the ESNY Slack chat, Danny Small, who we've had on the show once, he went so far as to say, and I can't say I disagree with him. He goes, it's the Cap's innings. He's fine.
Yeah, I've seen people floating that around for a bit, and it's like, yeah, fine, cool. And what better opportunity to see, like, Clark Schmidt take a spot, you know? He was fantastic against the Mets.
Up until the end, yeah. He lost his command at that point, and I think, honestly, because he got 2 quick outs, so we're like, oh, great, he's awesome. But then I think the gravity of the situation kind of set in for him, and he's like, oh, okay, like, usual starter, 9th inning, 2 outs against the Mets, and I think he just kind of got a case of the yips.
Yeah.
But at the same time, look, the rotation next year, Alec. You got Gerrit Cole. Sebi's going to come back on his option. Montas is there. Nestor's there. That 5 spot is Clark Schmidt's to lose.
Absolutely.
He's a first round pick. They've put a lot of time and energy into him. And we've had to be a little patient with them because 2020, he basically lost a year of development, which for a pitcher can be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
But
don't forget, he was coming off the arm injury out of college.
Yeah, Tommy John. He's a South Carolina guy, right? Yes,
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. So the way I see it, even though he's going to fill in for Nestor, let's say he makes 3 starts, right? He doesn't have to necessarily be great or like have 3 quality starts. But I will say this, Alec. I think that if Clark Schmidt struggles when given this opportunity, there's a very big chance that in the wintertime, in the offseason, we don't know who it's going to be for yet. Maybe it's for Pablo Lopez. He's going to be traded.
Yeah. One can only hope, because I am so sick and tired of seeing him play. Just so sick and tired. You see my tweet the other day when he... Yeah. I think it was when he hit the ground. He grounded into the double play after the bases were walked loaded on the first pitch.
Oh, so you're talking about Gleyber Torres being packaged with Clark Schmidt for Pablo Lopez. All right.
You said trading Clark?
Yeah, if he struggles over 3 games, 3 starts for Nestor?
No. No.
Even if he lasts like 3 innings a start, you're gonna
no.
Okay, go.
Now he's making the team next year. He's gonna get a fair shot. Yeah, so you're saying, sorry, it's been a long day, and I completely thought we were still on Gleyber. Oh
no, Torres is gone. Torres is probably gone for Pablo Lopez, if anything. But no, Clark Schmidt, backtracking. Okay, you're reset here.
Yes, reset. There we go.
Okay, Clark Schmidt, let's say he has 3 starts for Nestor, covers those 3 starts, and he doesn't do all those 3 starts. You're comfortable bringing him back, giving him another shot next year?
Absolutely, because I think he's done enough.
He's 26 already.
Yeah, but like, you know, you got how many more years of control do you have left on him?
Quite a few.
Are we completely sold on getting a pitcher from Miami, a notoriously pitcher-friendly park, who doesn't have overbearing stuff, at least from the eye test? I don't know what his numbers are. Like,
well,
it
doesn't have to be Pablo Lopez. He was just an example, just like trading.
Oh yeah, well no, hey, if they come out and say, you know, I feel like, I don't know, like unless you're getting a guy, unless you're getting fucking Sandy Alcantara or maybe Edward Cabrera from the Marlins, I don't see anyone in that rotation who is going to be head and shoulders above what Clark is. Like, Clark is going to be controllable and then naturally cheaper.
Right.
So, unless you're going to swing a package of, like, Clark, Glaber, maybe a Peraza, maybe a Cabrera, and then whoever, maybe piece together a few others for, like, an Alcantara, then, yeah, absolutely, because Alcantara immediately is your number one. So,
you mentioned as well, though, Cabrera. We should talk about him. He frustrates me at the plate, but at the same time, I love the energy he brings to the team.
I haven't seen enough of his at bats. I know he had the one good game, and then, but hey, like, credit to that walk he took with the bases loaded. He didn't let the moment get too big for him, and he took what was given.
He reads the zone well. He's kind of got that first year D. Gregorius thing where if he sees a pitch in the zone, he's trying to do a big thing with it.
Right, right. I mean, hey, like, I want a kid like him to be aggressive. I want him to take his hacks. I think now that he's away from Yankee Stadium and away from some of the big, like, you know, inner city rivalry, and then also just like the AL East rivalry with the Blue Jays, like, we might see something a little bit different, maybe a little bit more like tuned down. But hey, that dude's glove is fucking insane.
Like, God, I can't believe he robbed a home run in right field.
Five defensive runs saved in right field in like 10 games.
But he's an infielder, right? What are you talking about? Five defensive runs saved in outfield. He's an infielder. No, that can't be right.
Yeah, so can we get rid of Hicks? Put Judge in center? Put Cabrera in right? I mean, hey, there we go. That's my guy.
Yeah, okay. Hicks. I don't know what we're going to do with him. No, I have no idea. Yeah. I appreciate his accountability that he's like, no, like, I'm having a terrible season. Like, I
would hope he's being accountable. I mean, like, that's kind of like the one thing that I've been getting a little bit peeved with the whole Joey Gallo situation, where now he's in LA and he's starting to hit the ball well. And I know, like, when he first saw it, he took some like veiled shots at the Yankees, and it's like, He said something about, like, oh, yeah, well, he's like, I thought we were winning in New York, but, man, we're really winning here in L.A. And he said something that just kind of, like, I was just like, dude, you should not have any ill will towards the organization, because they gave you more than enough fair chances to get out of your slump, and you just couldn't do it, right?
I think, like, he's also just got a sour taste in his mouth, because apparently it sounded like people were just going up to the street and just giving him the business.
Which is not okay. Like,
it is not okay.
It is not okay. I also think that what Michael Kay said was not okay. Like, because, like, I thought Gallo did a good job of taking ownership of his struggles, but I don't like hearing how all of a sudden the Yankees are regretting the Gallo trades, because it's like, no, like, he had plenty of time to prove that he was a major league quality hitter in New York, and he just couldn't do it. And yeah, New York is not for everyone. I'm not holding that against them, but let's not act like, you know, the Yankees made a boneheaded play here, because they didn't. They had to get rid of him.
Also, you could see in some of his at-bats from LA, he's taken what he learned from Dylan Lawson and applied that to what he's doing with the Dodgers. Like, one of his his first run with the Dodgers, he took this really clean swing and hit a home run to left field.
Yeah, like, when was the last time he's ever hit a home run in the left field?
Not that I've seen.
Yeah, right. So it's like, anyway, moving on again.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, oh, God, like, you're hearing people groan about Jordan Montgomery. Oh, he threw a Maddox one-hitter in for the Cardinals. Why did the Yankees trade him? People don't realize Jordan Montgomery would never accomplish that in the AL East. He just wouldn't. No. Not in the American League. This is why I am defending the trade. Nestor Cortez and Jordan Montgomery are the same exact pitcher. The only difference is that Nestor Cortez can spin a fastball. Jordan Montgomery, yeah, he can spin a fastball, but it rarely ever works for him. Like, more often than not, he's not going to have that good fuck you fastball that Nestor Cortes is more than happy to throw. I'm very happy for that Jordan Montgomery is in the National League, especially the National League Central. He is a junk baller. He pitches to contact. He is a changeup, curveball, sometimes cutter, soft contact guy. He is a great pitcher now that he is in the National League, especially the National League Central, not to beat that dead horse. People are finally going to see just how good he is and that, yeah, he was great for the Yankees. Now be happy for him now. Like you said earlier, just enjoy baseball.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's been building up for a week. That has been building up for so long.
Oh man.
Oh my God. We got to get Cam on the show just so I can do that rant at him.
Oh yes, please.
ladies and gentlemen, Cam is our buddy in our Yankees group chat who we love the guy and he acknowledges that he doesn't mean half the shit he says, but oh my God, like he has some takes where like even Yankees Twitter is going to look at him and be like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you?
He's so fucking funny.
It's funny. He's like so.
I laugh so hard.
It's great. I feel like we should have him on. Just have him be like full triumph, the insult comic dog. Just have him do his thing, and we just go back and forth with him accordingly. Yeah, maybe once the West Coast trip is over and we're all kind of breathing a little easier.
Yeah, right, dude. I feel like I've been trying to catch my breath for the last like week and a half. Just not even baseball related, life related. I'm like. Yeah, shuffling my feet, damn it.
Try having a toddler.
Oh, I can't. I can only imagine. I have a dog, and that's he's hands full enough.
Yeah, having a toddler is a lot like having a dog. It's just like, hey, come here. Okay, I'm coming over there right now. Your food. Eat your food. Do you need to go potty?
No.
No, apparently not supposed to say no right no anymore. You're only supposed to say that if they're absolutely in danger.
Like, really?
No! Anyway, yeah, so, oh God, I hate West Coast games during the week, man. Can we just complain about that for a second?
Well, the one good thing is it's Thursday.
Yes.
I'm working from home tomorrow.
That's good.
So I don't have to wake up at 6:45.
Oof.
Yeah, so it sucks because, like,
kid wakes up sometimes.
Yeah, well, it sucks because, like, where I work, it's a bit of a commute just with traffic in Philadelphia.
It's to Jersey. So it's what, like 45 minutes?
When there's no traffic, it's like 30.
Okay. That's not terrible.
No, it's not. But it's you know, I got to get through. It's a reverse commute out of Philly. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain point where I got to get past University City because up until University City, that's where all the traffic is.
Oh, yeah.
So if I wait too long, I don't get in time. So I have to leave more on the early side to get in a little earlier. And it's just like, it's not a great situation for that, but I mean, yeah, it's hybrid. So I'm starting to work in a little bit more working from home, which is good. And which means I can stay up and watch a few innings.
There you go.
But I don't know how much later I'm going to stay up. My head is fucking pounding right now. And I'm ready for bed.
Yeah. And thankfully it's a 9:30 start as opposed to a 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like we had in Seattle. Yeah,
that's true.
All right. Well, we are going to go enjoy these games, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter at JoshBESNY. You can find Alec at Alec_Montecalvo. Hopefully we beat up on these Oakland A's and don't have to grind out too many wins, right?
Yes, please. I mean, if we get another fucking game where James Caprillion shows why the Yankees draft him in the first round, I'm going to lose my mind.
Good Lord.
He's pitching tonight, right?
Yeah, him versus Tyone.
Yeah, it's like, please, can we not get a reminder that James Caprillion was a Yankee at one point, just please? Because he seems like he always shuts us down. No one else.
I think we did okay off of him last time.
Did he?
Yeah. Also, he's not having that great of a – you know, let's look up – before we go, let's look up his Baseball Savant page. I'm going to look that up.
I feel like he just keeps getting hurt.
Baseball Savant. Well, I mean, we did trade him when he was fresh off Tommy John surgery. All right, so he's 28. Opening up his StatCast page. 3-7, 4.29 ERA in 20 starts this year, 1.33 whip. He's not going to give up a lot of hard contact, but his expected batting average, it's a lot of blue on this page with.
Yeah.
And the only red, it's his hard hit rate. It's a very light red 61st percentile, but everything else, he's, beatable guy. Very beatable guy. That's what we'll say. Yeah, very beatable like pitcher.
His best pitch this year is his sinker and his changeup. And even then, like, those are his fourth and fifth pitches altogether. His four-seamer is a negative one run value. Slider is a negative two. Curveball is not good.
Okay, so he's an Oakland pitcher on a last-place Oakland team. All right, so we are going to go ahead and watch these games. Thanks for listening, folks, and we will see you next week.